Hi, with Truth News Radio Australia, and it is the 12th of September 2012. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to another show. I'm very pleased to be able to speak to you again, and very pleased to be able to do it every week. Last week we had quite an interesting discussion with Syrian girl, the activist from Syria, who came on for about an hour, and we got into some really, really interesting points about the whole geopolitics and the kind of long-term objectives of those who are fomenting discord in Syria. So I hope you caught that show, and if you didn't, I suggest you go back and have a look at the archives of Truth News Radio, because that was really quite an important show. Now today I'm going to get into a bit of a discussion. I have on the line with me my good friend Chris Toland, who's been often on the radio. He's been on Radio Skid Row for quite a long time with Jack Frost there on the morning show. And Chris is a student of the world and human nature and reality, and he joins us now from Sydney, Australia. Welcome to Truth News Radio, Chris Toland.
G'day. You can call me Crispy T if you like, or Chris Toland, I don't mind. But thank you for having me today, Herod. And yeah, good to be with you today. Thank you.
It is. And I hope I haven't exposed your personal information unwittingly or unwantedly.
I mean, I think the people who need to know who I am, or who have found out who I am, you know, the snooping and the Google bots and all the... Why bother hiding anything, you know? They know who we are.
Yes, the Google bots and the cyber snoops are, you know, even as we speak, recording everything we do, and they'll be retaining that just in case some bloated government official feels like, you know, fingering through your personal records at some point in the future, maybe just out of curiosity or sheer boredom. I'm not totally up to speed with the cyber crime bill, but there's been a lot of talk about it on the internet and on Facebook, and really there's not much more we need to say about that, is there, Chris? I mean, we know that that's just a reality now, and you might as well just put up or shut up.
I'd like for there to be more, you know, a stronger opposition to it, because I remember a few years ago, there was the sex party came out as a sort of a, what I perceived to be a controlled opposition and derailing of the agenda, and they were the ones who were against it. And, you know, I mean, I think I wish there was a stronger opposition and more vocal opposition, but yeah, I mean, I'm not there. What can I say? You know, I'm not raising hackles and complaining, but yeah, it's a fact of life that your cell phone knows where you are, and whoever needs to, who has control of the technology, can find out where you are at any time and basically listen to you while your cell phone's in your pocket. So, yeah, no, that's one aspect of it. But yeah, I wish there were more people vocally complaining. Yeah, and
indeed,
I wish there was more awareness.
Indeed,
but yeah, we do what we can.
Now, Chris, I thought tonight we might have a little chat about just the general quality of life that we find in Australia. I'm actually overseas at the moment. I'm currently in Thailand, and I've been here for about a week, but I'm going to be here for a few months till December, and it's kind of an experiment for me to do something a little different for a while. And also, I'm really curious about other countries and comparing them to Australia. There's a lot of things I like about Australia. I think Australia has vast amounts of potential to be a great country. But
yep, I agree.
The sad reality is that our quality of life has just been going steadily down, down, and down. Would you agree
with
that?
I agree. And it's got to do with control of currency and issuance of it. So you don't have these recessions, booms, and busts, you know, the business cycle, what they call it, whatever they want to call it. It's just a manifestation of the control that central banks have over issuance of currency, and they manipulate the flow of it. It's getting hard. Yeah, I think the fact you see the boom in childcare, it really shows the fact that women must work. It's not a choice anymore. It's not a feminist choice to earn as much as a man and, you know, really prove yourself, but nowadays, women must work.
But you know what I also feel?
Back to a little while ago, then it didn't used to be like that. And it should get easier with, you know, improvements in technology, but it doesn't, no.
What I also feel about life in the big cities in Australia is it's very oppressive. Yes, I mean, you know, both women and men have to work. Both, you know, parents have to work in a family. And
yeah.
But more than that, the quality of life of people is very much a drudgery. It feels very oppressive. And I'm just comparing it to Thailand and what I see the quality of life of people here. Now, Thailand has a really booming economy. They are not in any kind of slowdown. You know, everything is growing. They have one of the most advanced urban transit systems I've ever seen, which is constantly being improved upon. It's a very advanced rail network, which is an elevated train network called the SkyTrain.
SkyTrain. It's great.
And it's infinitely extendable because basically they just, when they want to extend it, there's nothing to stop them. It's not as if they've got to demolish any houses. They just keep building it over the top of things, right? So it's actually quite obviously complicated and expensive, but relatively straightforward for them to just extend the network of transport. Now, but the other thing is that, I mean, that's actually quite advanced, whereas we in Sydney have the most decrepit, dysfunctional, backward, ancient transport system, I mean, that really dates back at least 60 years. I mean, it hasn't really been upgraded in about 60 years. Would you agree with that?
Oh, well, we've got spur lines that come off. You know, I think 40 years ago, or maybe 30 years ago, there was the extension from Sutherland to Cronulla. There's the recent ride, was it Rhodes to Chatswood link with Macquarie Uni? But, yeah, I mean, the people out in the people in the northwest still aren't serviced with any sort of decent public transport.
Yeah, but my concern is not even so much with those outlying areas, which of course have had some additions, which obviously are better than nothing. My concern is more about the inner city, which is where most people are travelling, is that is completely ancient and completely dysfunctional. I mean, Central Railway Station hasn't even had like a facelift in about 50 years. It's just old and filthy. And the trains themselves are old and filthy, unless you're lucky enough to get one of the newer ones. But they only run like a few times in the morning when a lot of commuters travel. You might get a newer one. Most of the day you get these really old trains that are never cleaned. They are not cleaned. They are absolutely disgusting. And
I lived in Japan for a while, and they employed people to every morning and afternoon they would clean the handrails. So there's a woman in a white coat cleaning handrails, and she would be there every day, and that's her job. And the people running the trains have uniforms and gloves, and it's very neat, and everything worked well. But I think the problem with Australian transport is, well, Sydney specifically, I think Melbourne's fantastic. Melbourne works. That's a good model of a perfect transport city. But Sydney's just the exact opposite. It's just they're thinking of getting another M5. There's too many cars on the road, so don't nothing about, you know, a car parking terminus at Campbelltown or Liverpool. So let's just make another one. Let's make another one parallel with it, so we can put twice as many cars on. That goes down to the fact that cars make money for the system. You've got excise on petrol, and you've got all the RTA stuff. So it's just all the fees and things to run a car. It's expensive, but they don't want us to have other options. They want us to have cars.
Well,
my theory on why Sydney transport is rubbish.
Yes, indeed. Sydney transport is rubbish in what appears to be an engineered, almost conscious attempt to demoralize humanity. Although that sounds a little bit ridiculous to say that. But there are so many aspects of life in Sydney which really are very demoralizing. And
the sheer expense of the city, it's a freaking expensive city to live in.
Oh, it's actually the most expensive place in the world. Apparently, yes, it has now been officially designated the most expensive place in the world for real estate and for food. I think New Zealand, actually, believe it or not, is maybe a little more expensive in some respects for goods and food. But in terms of the cost of rent and real estate, Australia is really, really high, way higher than Europe. My friend Josh Jackson, who is often on this show, he's over in Berlin at the moment, and his costs there are way lower. Way lower. Now, we always used to think that Europe was expensive and Australia would be cheaper. Not at all. It's the other way around.
It's interesting, isn't it? We're supposed to have a powerful dollar in the scheme of things, but it doesn't buy us enough really to have a comfortable life in this beautiful place. It's a beautiful city and it's gorgeous and it's great. It's a great place to go for a swim and, you know, look at the beautiful harbour, but we can't really afford to go out much because it's too expensive.
Well, I mean, it's gorgeous if you've got $10 million and a property on the harbour front. And, you know, you need at least $10 million for that. Like the entry to that is about $10 million. And, you know, it's not too bad if you're one of those McMansion tradies who's kind of done really well, you know, out of carpentry or plumbing or something like that, you know, who lives out in Homebush or somewhere like that. But, you know, those are anomalies. The vast majority of people in Sydney live in the western regions, which are extremely bleak, extremely grey, lacking in any of what we'd call the beauty of the Australian landscape. They're just grey, dismal, urban wastelands. I mean, what do you say to that?
Well, when you come in from the sky, it's the western suburbs is the sea of terracotta tiled roofs and green trees. So I admit that places like Lakemba, that's a suburb that's almost inner west, and that's got pretty ugly housing estate looking unit apartments, and there are some pretty dismal looking places. But I lived in Sapporo for a while, and Japan has a lot more grey. Even though the public transport's fantastic, there's a lot more grey, and I think the trees make a difference here. But yeah, I think living in suburbia, that's the reality. You have to travel an hour to get to where you work. But over to you. Yeah.
Yeah. It's the quality of life of the urban wage slave around the world. It's not radically different. There are some, I guess, individual differences in individual cities. Some things are better or worse in some places. I think there is a more general quality about the way people live in the industrialized countries of the West. What I mean by that is that the conditions that have been set up in the monetary system that we are within in these countries has created a kind of a prison-like experience of people's lives. We are now actually going to break. We'll be right back. You're with Truth News Radio Australia. Please stay with us, talking to Crispy T, and we'll be right back after this short break. Are you getting fed up with all the disinformation, deception, spin, propaganda, half-truths and downright lies in mainstream news? Looking for something different? Visit Truth News Radio Australia, www.truthnews.com.au, and may the truth set you free.
Change gonna come. Oh, yes, it will.
Hi, welcome back. You're with Truth News Radio. Great to be speaking to you today. My name's Hereward Fenton, and Truth News Radio is an Australian-made, homegrown podcast and live radio show that goes out on the Logos Radio Network out of Austin, Texas, and, of course, is available online through our website at www.truthnews.com.au. So please check out the site and leave some comments if you find any of our podcasts interesting, and join the Facebook page if you'd like to participate in some more social networking. Now, Crispy, we were talking there before the break about the way the quality of life is kind of shaped by the economic forces and the kind of monetary system that's been created that has tended to create a quality of a prison-like existence for people. Life is just an endless uphill climb. That's just never ending.
I think the you're right that it's the monetary system, and it's also the governmental system. I think that a lot of people see that the money is issued by the government, but I think the big thing is that the government does not issue the money. The central bank does, and they lend money to governments, and the governments are there to tax the people into getting it back, and they do it by hook or by crook, and they must pay interest on it to the central bank boys that run the whole planet, you know, that are in charge, the international bankers, you know. So it's a tough one, and we need to I want people to understand that commodity money, I mean, I think you've had these sort of arguments with Josh Jackson before.
Indeed.
About whether direct credit or commodity money. I mean, there are a lot of different ideas, but debt-based money, which is money printed out of nothing and lent into existence by central banks to governments that tax the citizenry to repay them. And it's basically creaming off of the productive worth of the people and does render them as slaves, in fact. So the debt, it's bondage to a financial system that is operated under these laws, you know, legal tender laws that says you must pay your taxes and you must pay it in this rubbish currency that they print out of nothing, and if you avoid, if you barter or trade in kind, then you're not allowed to barter, really. You know, any trade over $10,000 has to be traded in our legal currency, money. So you can't say you've got a nice car, I've got a nice boat, let's swap. No, if they're valued at $20,000, technically that's illegal. You know, you can't do it. So even if it's $10,001, it's illegal. If it's $9,999, they let you do it. But if it's $10,000, they won't. You know. So
now, in combination with this system, of course, we have the system of creation of wealth from debt, which again is the key sort of cornerstone of the way our modern societies work. Everyone is put into debt, and that debt actually is the money that's in currency. That is actually the basis of our currency is all debt. Now, this
modern currency,
this of course has the effect of putting people under constant pressure, and I believe that actually is the basis of the kind of prison quality that our life has, because you are a debt slave, and your decisions about what you can do with your life are constantly filtered by the fact through this prism of the fact that you are a debt slave, and you simply aren't free to do what you want. No, because in order to get up in the morning, you had to, you know, basically compromise yourself.
Yeah, it's a difficult one to imagine. It's very hard to imagine a society without being controlled. I mean, you know, I don't know if it's Schopenhauer or Goethe that says the slave, the worst type of someone who believes they're not free, someone who really believes they're free is the best kind of slave. I don't know. Do you know that Goethe?
Yes, I've read that. Those who are the most enslaved are the ones
most
who are
hopelessly
not
enslaved,
aware of it.
Those who wrongly believe that they're free. So that's the issue that I think you and I both face in basically communicating with people, that the whole world is owned and run by the international banking family cartel syndicate. You know, It's the Rothschilds in London. It's the Rockefellers in New York. And I think they're really their only front men and continuers of the Venetian system that transported itself to London in the, just after Henry VIII and in that time there when they were setting up the Bank of England. That's a bit pre that, but
indeed,
yeah, pre the setting up of the Bank of England, it ushered in a new era and the creation of the Crown City of London. It was basically a transfer of Venetian power to London and their shifting of, you know, their morphing. And I think
I have it on good authority, by the way, that the City of London is really the home of the financial oligarchy of this earth. It's not okay. Wall Street. It is the City of London.
Yeah, I've heard that as well. And I think Wall Street operates as their sort of strongman. Well, America, rather, operates as the strongman collection agency for the New World Order, the banking family, New World Order money syndicate. So I think the way I look at society and life that we live is that we're ants in a little glass box, and the money that we have to use are like the crumbs of food that the controllers sprinkle in for us. And They can change anything. By power over the currency, they are the owners of the world, and they can decide whose currencies are worth more than others, and they can decide anything. It's basically a kid with a box full of ants, and they can put the box into the hot sun, or they can put a magnifying glass and fry some ants, and they're just in total control of the whole society.
I think also, Chris, I think that there are phases. This is just, I'm really just freeform speculating here, but I think that there are actually, that there are phases that that occur in the kind of progress of this monetary system that has been created, and they're different. Like, it's different in each phase. It's different in each stage. And because earlier on in this monetarist debt burdened system that we've got, it was actually a lot better for people. First, straight after World War II, for about the first 30 years after World War II, there was a period of continuous growth. And it really was a sunrise, you know, scenario. And a lot of that's the baby boom generation who now has most of the wealth in our society, if they've been able to retain it. Although a lot of them now, as they're getting into their 70s and 80s, are then probably losing all that money as they go into nursing homes and into finance management programs that basically take all of your wealth and basically use it to pay for your nursing home expenses. That is actually what's going on at the tail end of that.
65 plus also, you know, the super that people have been paying for their working lives is not worth as much as they actually
pay. Yes, a lot of that has deteriorated as well. But I just wanted to compare it to what I'm seeing here in Thailand, which appears to me to be in an earlier phase of this process where it's actually working quite well. People are doing very well. But yet I see the same process going on. It's just at a different stage in that process.
Yep.
And what I fear is what's going to happen down the track. Because as we know, as the debt builds, it leads to these inevitable bubbles and collapses. And then once you have the bubble and the collapse, you start to get the fascism and the totalitarianism coming in as well. That seems to be an intrinsic part. And I'm actually quite amazed at the ingenious of it, if it was actually planned this way, because it takes quite a long time to unfold, and yet it seems to create, in the end, this collapsed society with a pinnacle pyramid control structure owning and controlling everything.
Yep, I agree with that. But I think phases and stages you use, I call it progressions.
Chris, we are going to break. Sorry to cut you off. You can continue with that straight after the break. You're with Truth News Radio Australia. Don't go away. We're getting into some really interesting themes here. We'll be right back after these few short ads.
How long before you reach all your selfish goals. Punchline after punchline, leaving us so.
Hi, you're with Truth News Radio Australia. Welcome back to the show. Now, Chris, before you were so rudely interrupted there, you were making an important point. Please continue.
There's the first world and there's the third world. And the idea is you're seeing differences in the stages, you're saying.
Indeed.
I see it as there are various points in the last 100, or I'd say 150 years, where we've seen a lot of changes and you say different stages. And we can put sort of time marking frames on these things, like the 1913 creation of the Federal Reserve in America, which was a big one for the New World Order. 1930, the Roosevelt era. The 1947 creation of the CIA and the National Security State. And, you know, they all have their different influence. End of World War II and the creation of the National Security State. The era of communism versus capitalism, that whole agenda.
Well, to use a sporting analogy, Chris, I mean, if we were divided in sort of like game, set, and match, right? To me, what it feels like is if we're in a kind of a match that began in about 1913, or, you know, around about the turn of the century.
And
there's been some sets and some games in that. You know, like the first set was probably that period, First World War up to the Great Depression. Then the second set, you might say, was the end of the Great Depression to the end of the Second World War. And then the third set, the onset of the Great Depression to the end of the Second World War. And the third set was probably the end of the Second World War till about now, which has been long. It's been a long one. But I sort of feel like we've been in a continuous kind of stage of the process since the end of the Second World War, which is now finally coming to its end. Something's going to happen soon. We don't know what it is, but something big is going to happen soon.
That's I see what you're saying there as well. And it's the sort of collectivizing of the world. They had the League of Nations, which failed. They've got the UN, which came out of World War II. And the idea now is to get all the nations of the world to agree to a one currency. Basically, that's the idea. And there could be some, I mean, this big event. I mean, I've heard it said that there's going to be an October surprise before the November election. And who knows what it will be. Whether it is the prelude to World War III, if a nuke goes off in American City, or if there's a fake assassination or attempt on the president, which will be spun as a white versus black thing. So who knows what's going to happen? But there's all these ideas that there's going to be an enormous, a big event which will usher in. Well, I don't want to say it, but World War III. I'm not looking forward to it, and I hope that. See, what you're saying before is about progressions and the developments of the system. By now, I think that we've had such freedom of communication and technology, and there is what I perceive to be a global awakening happening, and that is to the reality that life should not be drudgery. Life should be lived and enjoyed. And when you come to the realization that you are a slave in a system, in a maze or on a rat wheel, you just surviving for tokens, for debt tickets, basically for slave tokens. You know, it really sucks. So I think enough people are realizing this, and they're finding out that, well, hold on, there is a difference between government and central banking, and the whole world is owned by, you know, very ancient banking dynasties, not very ancient, but ancient banking dynasties and a system of enslavement, which is modern money. I think a lot of people are finding that out. And there are a lot of people, and I think the controllers see us as, you know, there are too many sheep in the pen, and or on the pastures, and there are not enough shepherds. So
indeed, the beauty of you know, a big event, as you so put it, is that it has the effect of wiping the slate clean and clearing all the debt. You see, once you have a big event, all that debt that's built up that we can never repay because it's just impossible, which is dragging us down and pulling us into this brutalized totalitarian state as well, because it comes with it all this other baggage of excess government, excess interference, false flag terrorism. That all comes with it. That's all part of the package, I believe. But when you finally get to the end of that and you have a big event of some kind where a lot of infrastructure is destroyed and a lot of people are killed, there's generally a clearing of debt and you can start again. And one suspects that those who have engineered this are looking forward to that, because then they're going to say, well, now we can start again, because that's pretty much what happened at the beginning of World War II. It was all, we started again, didn't we? It was actually, and then at the end of World War II, there was a period of growth. So, sorry, please continue.
No, you're right. That is what happens. Them starting again. I think the very interesting point is that the iconography used in the closing ceremony of the Olympics, there was a lot of conspiracy movement whisperings about a big bombing or something that was going to happen. The goons in security outfits, the patting people down, they got insufficient training. And even within their ranks, their trainers are saying, you have to be ready and on your toes, because we expect something very big to happen. And they're all warned about something happening, but it didn't happen. But at the end of that closing ceremony, we saw a phoenix rising from the ashes. And well, that's interesting. It was full of Illuminati symbolism and iconography, and you think, okay, we're having the phoenix from the ashes. I mean, by the way, the eagle, the bald eagle on the American dollar bill was originally a phoenix.
Right.
And they made it a bald eagle later. So the controlling oligarchy does reinvent itself, and they use destruction and, raising the whole countryside to burn it and then start again. The phoenix rising from the ashes is their iconography. That the bird, the phoenix is their, what they use. And you've got the eagle that looks two ways, and that they said that's a phoenix also. It's just Illuminati iconography I'm talking about. But
yeah, the symbolism in the Olympic Games is just, it's just oozing with it. And of course, one of the biggest Olympic Games that was ever held that had the most symbolism was the one that Adolf Hitler presided over in 1936. And it's just really interesting, isn't it, to sort of reflect on that, because the Nazis absolutely loved the Olympic Games. It was a great platform for them to sort of strut around and talk about their thousand-year Reich and how great they were and all this crap, and so the symbolism of the fascist symbology has always been potentially there. I mean, these sort of great public events, and of course it goes back to the Roman times, these public events are symbols of the unchallenged power of the massive empire, and we all must bow down before it. And of course, people say, well, that they were speculating that there could be some attack, but of course it didn't happen. Basically, these events, the Olympic Games events, they don't really care. Like, they don't need to organize or orchestrate some false flag event at the Olympic Games. They'll do it whenever they feel like it, whenever it's, whenever it's opportune. Some people tend to, think they can know what's going on, and they think they can second guess the way these people are working. I don't think you can. And I think it's a little bit of a delusion to think that you can.
I think so too. But there's this whole point about I've looked into it. I haven't made a decision one way or another, but I think it's interesting. The astrological perspective, the dates and the times and the solstices and all these things, some people think they can predict whether it's going to be at a certain position where we are. And I've looked into it. I haven't. I mean, maybe you've got people who know about it who can link you up, but the Illuminati like doing things at interesting astrological times.
Well, it's like we've always got 20/20 hindsight. Like, we can always look at what they did and say, oh, yeah, well, that matches that. Yeah, yeah. But when you try to project it into the future, you know, who knows? You know, it's like
with the NASA.
Well,
unless
you're Nostradamus or something. Sorry.
No, the NASA flight launches have always fallen on these specific, unusual astronomical or logical date. That's another issue to get into. But predicting and second guessing the Illuminati is a hard challenge. And another point is that they don't just have one hand to play. They don't have just one move ahead. You know, they're 50 years ahead of us in the design of society, and it's like a game of chess to them. They've got enough moves up their sleeves, and they own and run the system that we live in, and they can decide what they want to do. But
it's incredible, isn't it? I mean, we don't even know who they are, and yet it's like we infer their existence in the same way that astronomers infer the existence of a giant, you know, planet because of its gravitational effect.
Well, you can infer through gravity, and you can see the connections in business and who's connected to whom. There's some really great mind mapping software. Your connections mapping software on Tragedy and Hope, the website Tragedy and Hope, they've got this really sophisticated piece of software that links all these shared.
I'll just have to cut you short there, Chris. We're just going to break. We'll be right back after these short messages with Truth News Radio Australia. Please stay with us. It's great to have your company today. Back here with Truth News Radio. I'm talking to Crispy T from Sydney, Australia, and I'm currently broadcasting from Bangkok. This is just an amazing opportunity for us to talk, to share ideas, to listen to each other. And I just wanted to get your thoughts, Chris, on this very medium that we're using here, because I think it's important, and yet sometimes one could doubt it, and one could say, well, why would we do a show like this? And like the way I was brought up, you know, there was television, there was newspapers, there was radio, and those were all the experts, the professionals who knew what they were doing, right? And anyone who, you know, wanted to do something on their own, like some sort of amateurish ham radio thing, was just a bit of a joke, right? I mean, I grew up before the internet, right?
Yep.
And I still have that kind of feeling of, you know, sometimes doubt about whether, in fact, this type of conversation that we're having here is of any value. But it's only when
It absolutely is of value, and I do think we are making a difference, not just you and me specifically, but the people like us with the access to the technology and the interest and desire to communicate and speak out about what's going on. We are making an impact, and I think the drop in viewership of news and the drop of readership of newspapers, it really indicates that people are getting their news elsewhere. And you know, Facebook and Twitter and connected interest of current events. I mean, I use Facebook just for current events and maybe a little bit of chatting and messaging, but I see it as a way to broadcast information. So we are making a difference, and I think that the powers that be want to control our ability to communicate, and that's the limiting of the free speech that is coming through these cyber snooping laws in Australia. You know that, and it's we are making an effect. I think it is making a difference, but I think it's in a different way. The people who make a difference are the people who get out there and do stuff. See, a lot of people are just very passive, and whether or not they were. They had enough time or opportunity, they might just watch footy. And I mean, think they really have to lack food and lack money before they'll get involved. You know, that's just the fact of life.
Yeah, and also there is another point that I think is equally important to, as you say, the information side of this. We are bringing information, and we have done that on many topics, and that's part of what drives this show, is the fact that there is information that's not getting out. I mean, in this show today, we're just having a yarn. We're not sort of bringing yep. some amazing new information. But having yep. a yarn is another important thing that we do. And why is that important? It's about empowerment. It's about reflecting and giving people a sense that we reflect back to them what they might be thinking, and they can do the same with what we're saying, because we are in need of empowerment, because there's a psychological problem that we've got dealing with the monolithic state, is that we all feel incredibly weak and disempowered. Mm. What's your take on that?
Standing up and saying no is the start. You know, we have to, it will come to a point where we will have to say no. What's that Jefferson or quote, the exact amount, the level of tyranny that you can put up with or will put up with is the exact level of tyranny that you will get.
So brilliant quote. That's such a genius quote. I mean, that's just so insightful, yeah. isn't it? You see, those guys yeah. understood the dynamics of the human condition. The human condition is one where we've really got to be careful all the time about this creeping totalitarianism. It will just keep coming back. Yeah. Vigilance.
Doesn't take a breath. It keeps going.
Yeah, vigilance.
Yeah. I about the Marnie system, I hope that through these sort of discussions, it'll hopefully spur people on to investigate a bit more. It's a wild patchwork to look into. And you say that the gravity of the financial elite indicates their power. You know, the government structures or the giant industries that surround them, it indicates that they have giant mass, and that's true to what you've said. But more, you can find you just ask questions. Question why? Well, if every country is in debt, then who are we in debt to? You know, if all the countries in Europe are in debt to each other, I mean, can't they just get their notebooks out and cancel some things? Like, it doesn't work like that, though. You know, someone is collecting, and people need to ask who is collecting. So that will be the essence of unraveling. For me, it helped me when I read G. Edward Griffin's book, The Creature from Jekyll Island. It really painted a very clear picture of what's going on. So hopefully some people will read that. But just check out these discussions we can have. I'm not going to put my sources there. Unfortunately, I like to read books that are well sourced, but I know I'm not doing that. But
we don't have to. We don't have to quote sources. I mean, we're just intelligent people. We're human beings who've got the ability to think and logic, and we've got reason. And that's what the ancient Greeks did. You know, they didn't have any sources either. They just sat down and thought about it, and that was it. You know, it was from first principles. You know, and I think another thing that we probably need to do is get back to first principles, because so much of what we've been taught apparently is not true. And we
generally all of it. If you went to school in a state school, generally all of it.
yeah. So referring to these wonderful books that we might have read can actually be a trap, and it certainly is a trap, I think, for a lot of well-educated people, because they think they know something, and they think, I read this book, or I read that book, I went to university, I've got an advantage here, and that gives them this kind of smug kind of confidence. But
I don't want to be smug.
Indeed. And I mean, it's something you've got to let go of, actually. It's very hard to let go of as well. You know, you've got to actually let go of some of your learning. You've got to let some new learning in and let go of some of the things you thought you knew. It's pretty hard, isn't it?
G. Edward Griffin has a very gold, I'm not sure if he's a gold bug specifically, but, I've seen different perspectives on the solutions than what he offers. And I don't have any dogmas or sacred cows that I'm afraid to kill. You know, if I learn new information, I'll happy to go there. And I think everyone should be. Definitely reading, finding out, having your opinions and your concepts challenged, it is enriching, and it makes you grow.
What do you think about the cultural aspects, though, of empowerment, which we seem to have lost as well with music and art having just been turned into very commoditized, sort of becoming the property of the system itself, rather than being vehicles for the empowerment of people. There's been a lot of breakthroughs in that, and there's been some good people have come on my show, musicians and artists, but the feeling that people have these days is that those media are not, you know, there's not a sort of a vanguard of a revolution through art and music like we had, say, in the 1960s. I mean, how important do you think that is? Because I think it's very important. I really think that having something to feel passionate about that's beyond just sort of talking about abstract intellectual ideas, but that really gets into art, and by art I mean all forms of human artistic expression, is something that is absolutely needed. And if only we could rekindle that, I think that there's another... I mean, it's about actually enriching your life. It's not just about, you know, achieving some goal, and it's not just about a political aim. It really is about enriching your life in a deep way.
Yeah. I mean, I like art and music, but I think if you're talking protest music, I mean, there's the music of the dance halls or the cabaret lounges of Nazi Germany, and they had a lot of satirical... protest art, you know, cabaret stuff, and Brecht, is it? Bertolt Brecht. And yeah, there were, and the protest movement in Vietnam. I mean, art, I don't know what you're talking about specifically regarding culture as a reflection. I think...
No, not so much as a reflection, as an empowerment. I mean, really, that there is something that we're missing, because people are just atomized and anonymized and don't feel that there's anything that they can be part of that's just going to make them feel that they do make a difference. I had a guy on from a band, the Skinwalkers band, which is a band that's got a huge amount of passion about what's going on in the world. And they do concerts around Australia, and they get people of all ages coming, like old and young. And it's kind of a hardcore punk sounding music, but people come because they've got a message in their music, which is about communicating what's going on in the world right now. And there's an intensity about it, and it's real.
Yep. I wish there was more of it. I mean, you say everything's fractured and broken into different subcategories and subgroupings. That's true. It's great to see. I want to find out about the Skinwalkers. It appeals right up my alley, you know. But
yeah, check out some of our podcasts. We've done a couple of interviews there with Matt from Skinwalkers band. Yeah.
Well, the thing I think that culture, it's promoted. If you listen to Alan Watt, he really talks about what gets promoted and what gets in the charts is what the controllers want to put there. And you know, Rihanna coming out with, you know, a whole lot of Illuminati symbology, and Lady Gaga wearing, you know, Egyptian stuff and covering a left eye and sort of using the all-seeing eye. What gets promoted as culture by the people who run the society? They promote an agenda with their
it just becomes another
sunlight.
Layer of control, doesn't it? Look, we're just getting to the end of the hour, Chris, unfortunately.
Yeah.
It's been superb talking to you. Are you planning to do any more radio broadcasts?
I'd like to, but at the moment, it's like you say, it's a hard one to get regular work and to survive, to build a family. It's just you're up against it.
We're going to have to wrap it up. Sorry there, Chris.
Thanks for having me.
It's been terrific having you on, and we'll be back next week. You've been listening to Truth News Radio Australia. It's been great talking to you today. See you then.
Thanks a lot. Bye.